Hello, my name is Bradley Alisea, and I am the Open Source Community Manager for the Rockware Initiative. I'm also a senior contributor at the Open Worm Foundation and founder of the Orthogonal Research and Education Lab. And I'm going to talk to you today about Reconfigure from All Over, a case of interdisciplinary open source communities. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is this big idea of spontaneous interdisciplinarity. So this is the idea that you can bring people together from different disciplines spontaneously into working groups and then accomplish great things in an open source context. So our question here is, how do we bring members of different disciplines together in open source communities to solve common problems? And this has a lot of practical implications. For one, it helps us to better solve what they call wicked problems, which are large, multidimensional problems with a lot of different sources of expertise needed to solve them and address the issues within them. These are often, you know, embodied by large social coordination problems. So that's one example. The other example is what C.P. Snow called the two cultures. And in what he sort of proposed is that you have science and you have the humanities, and that they speak these mutually exclusive languages. And they also have a lot of beliefs that don't necessarily overlap. And so you want to build a bridge between those two mindsets to sort of exploit the best of both worlds. And so that's maybe what we're trying to do in a lot of open source communities. It isn't as obvious because we don't think of our open source expertise, that diversity, as being these separate cultures, but they actually are, as we'll see. So there was a paper published in 2013 called The Rise and Fall of Interdisciplinary Research, The Case of Open Source Innovation. And they looked at different open source initiatives that were highly collaborative. And they found two trends. The first is that high involvement exchanges, which are exchanges that are, you know, where people are deeply invested in their exchanges and projects, those projects tend to decline pretty quickly. You have people from different disciplines or different perspectives. Those projects tend not to be sustainable. If people are working at low levels of involvement, it's more sustainable. But then again, people understand less about what actually is going on in the project. The second trend is that collaborations tend to decompose into parallel and disconnected groups. And so this is what the term decline means. And so you can see in this computation network that you see how fragmentation occurs. Early on in a project, there's a lot of citation of a lot of different sources from this network. And over time, it fragments so that participants are selectively sort of interacting with the things that they're familiar with. So there's this process that goes on. And the way research problems in communities are organized, particularly modularizing research processes, which we'll see how that works, is key to mitigating these kind of trends. So to fight this sort of fragmentation, we need to think a little bit outside the box. And we have to understand that community networks disconnect and reconnect over time. We have seasonal and random fluctuations of people onboarding and leaving. So people might work on a project over the summer or over the holiday, and then they leave. And so we have to account for all those sorts of fluctuations in addition to this sort of natural decay. The second trend is that community networks tend to be heterogeneous, which I mentioned previously. Whether they also will tend to form self-contained cliques over time is up to the community. So in this network, it's fragmented into two cliques, which are highly connected subnetworks and people who are talking to one another who have maybe similar disciplinary backgrounds, but there is no cross-communication here. So what is the structure of networks for open source collaboration? Maybe if we dive a little deeper into that, we can understand this better. So open source communities are transient, flexible, and what we call heterarchical, which means it's not necessarily hierarchical. No one's directing this stuff from the top down. It's heterarchical, where power tends to be distributed in different ways, especially these large interdisciplinary projects. So the term heterarchy simply means that your members or your nodes can be ranked in a number of different ways. You don't, you know, you have some project leaders, but you also have other people with expertise who tend to lead certain aspects of a project. If you have a low barrier to entry in your network, that means that what they call the preferential attachment rule, which often drives a lot of this fragmentation, is generally not applicable. And open source networks have multiple functions and objectives which reinforce this heterarchical aspect. So what I'm saying is that open source networks tend towards heterarchy, but there's a lot of things in terms of project management and other types of forces countervailing to that, that work against it. So these are examples of hierarchical networks here versus hierarchical networks. This is a hierarchy versus a heterarchy. And another example of this, where you have this structure of a tree versus the structure of a flat system. So how do we redraw network structure over time based on identity to find these optimal expertise reconfigurations? So now we're talking about taking expertise in the community and reconfiguring it somehow into different ways. So we have different things going on over time. How do we reconfigure this without fragmenting this community? And you end up talking only to the people who you would have talked to, you know, we know the most about what you know. So this is a growing network. This is an animation. It just shows how networks grow and doesn't necessarily show how they reconfigure, but we'll get into that in a little bit. So there are a couple of strategies here. One is selective disconnection with intentional interconnectivity. So this is a way to measure interaction. And this is something we can understand. So in this case, we kind of look at like the cliques in a network. We see people entering the community and we can actually monitor this clique formation. And then if we can understand it like this, so this person is joining these groups and these groups, these two cliques are skeptical of letting this new person in. If we can understand the structure a priori, then we can correct for some of the things that it selects for. And so this, in this case, we see a connectivity matrix where we can actually monitor these connections and mitigate this sort of clique formation. Another example